Welcome to the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast, the podcast for wellbeing professionals that looks at best practices in organisations that care about their people and which keeps an eye on the growing number of suppliers in the wellbeing space. The Workplace Wellbeing Podcast is sponsored by FastPayE, a financial wellbeing solution that facilitates flexible salary advances. It also provides access to financial education, a benefits assessment calculator, and a host of other financial wellbeing tools. FastPayE is part of the WorkTech group that includes ShopWorks Workforce Solutions and Solved by AI. ShopWorks offers scheduling and time and attendance tools that improve your workforce management processes, whilst Solved by AI provides unique artificial intelligence products that deliver optimum staffing levels and improve employee retention.
Hi, and welcome to the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Ian Hogg, Chairman of FastPay, and I'm delighted to be joined by David Rogers to talk about how the hospitality company Marston's managed its wellbeing challenges during lockdown, and also how a healthy lifestyle can help with wellbeing. David is the head of finance at Marston's PLC, a UK hospitality firm. During lockdown, he was a key member of their Wellbeing Warriors group, who were heavily focused on staff wellbeing, particularly given the number of employees that had been furloughed within the industry. David is also the author of Fueled, Fit and Fired Up, a book which discusses the impact of a healthy lifestyle on wellbeing. Hi, David. Thanks for joining us.
No problem at all, Ian. It's great to be with you today.
No, thanks. Listen, why don't we, as I said in the introduction, you know, your day job is finance, yet you've written a wellbeing book and you've been heavily involved in that area throughout lockdown with Marston's. To be honest, the finance guy is not normally the person in an organisation we most associate with wellbeing. So I think a good place to start is, why don't you tell the listeners a bit about your background and how you ended up with such a passion for the subject?
Okay, certainly, Ian. So, I've been working in private sector sort of finance roles for nearly 26 years now across various different industries. And the last 16 years have been spent in hospitality. And as well as that, I'm also a lead enterprise advisor with the Black Country Careers Hub up in the West Midlands. But across all of the things I've done, all across career, whether it's finance, property, franchise, operations, the common theme in everything is the people. And they're the people who drive the results within any business or any arena, whether it be life or work. And I think over time I've realised personally that my health and well-being's had a major influence on how I feel, how I relate to others, and how I ultimately engage with a business, with a project, with work in general. And I think it was this that inspired me to really start focusing on my own well-being and different ways of improving it. And that's just sort of, I suppose, naturally continued to work closely with the teams within the wider organisation.
Okay, and how long have you been at Marston's?
So I've been at Marston's for 3 years this year, My previous 13 years in hospitality were at Mitchells and Butlers.
Oh, fine. So proper experience levels then, and yeah. let's talk about, you know, the Marston's and the hospitality industry. I mean, to be honest, it seems like they've had a pretty tough lockdown. You know, it was almost as though the industry was sort of almost blamed for the spread of the virus, it seemed, at some stages. So what challenges did that bring internally with your teams?
Yeah, I mean, where shall I start? I think I agree entirely with what you said. I think it's fair to say that hospitality, amongst other industries, has certainly felt the most pain over the last 18 months through all of this. And there's been challenges that we expected to have, and I think there's been challenges which I would describe as sort of unintended consequences of what's happened through for various different reasons. But I mean, I'll just try and summarise as best I can some of the key ones. And I suppose the first one is going back to what I said in my introduction, which is the people. We quickly had to decide what we were doing around furlough and who was going to go on furlough and who was not, because I think it's easy to sit and say, well, all the pubs were closed, so therefore everybody was furloughed, and that wasn't the case. There was a lot of people working on projects at the time yes, most of the pub teams were furloughed, but we certainly had central support functions, of which I work in one of them, still continuing because we had to get a balance of a business continuity. And I think at the time as well of the first lockdown, we still were the whole owners of our brewing business. So whilst we weren't brewing much beer for the pubs, we were certainly still brewing beer for the off-trade, i.e. the supermarkets and off-licenses. So therefore, we had to get a balance between uplifted volumes on that part of the business and zero volume in other parts of the business. That then led on to a little bit around how we were managing our stock. So for those that can remember way back to March the 20th, I think it was, when the PM said all pubs are to close at midnight, or when we were due to close, we were left with a huge amount of stock on site. So we acted quite quickly and found, for example, food banks that we could give our fresh food stock to enable people to support the people who are less fortunate than the majority of us, you know, to help in that sort of arena. We did a few farm shops where we were selling stock where our pubs were in sort of villages where it was difficult to get out to shops. And then that led ultimately to later on in lockdown one, and also in the recent lockdown we had, where we were having stuff going out of date, so we had to try and get rid of it all. So there was a huge number of operational challenges before we even started looking at how do we communicate with our teams, what you know, who's going to do the comms, how we're going to get it to them. We went from having almost every one of the support function teams working in our HQ in Wolverhampton 5 days a week to all going, you know, working from home. So we were having to not necessarily develop tech, but we were having to adopt technology, you know, like we're recording this podcast, you know, today, not face to face. So we were, how does Teams work? What's Zoom like? All of these sort of things that we didn't necessarily use to the best of their ability. And we were trying to procure laptops for people to be able to work from home. And then we started having to look, and this is just during lockdown one, we then started having to look at how we were going to reopen in July when we got told we were able to reopen. And it's, you know, what is the legislation telling us this week? Is our tech sufficient in the pubs to enable us to welcome guests back into an environment that is not only safe and secure from a health and well-being point of view, but also giving them the best experience they can get in what was a very unique time and a unique experience for the industry.
It sounds massively challenging, and I've heard from a few businesses that don't sound like they've had quite the challenges that you've had. But there was an initial phase, it feels like the first week or so, where you just really had to solve the most immediate problems, and we're actually communicating with staff at the same time and thinking about their well-being. It was hard to have that at the top of the priorities. Was that a challenge you think Marston's had at the same time?
No, I totally agree with that, Ian. I think it was a few days following the announcement for the hospitality industry to close, I think before the furlough scheme, for example, was announced. So I think there was a lot of, you know, immediate worry about, you know, and this isn't just hospitality, a lot of businesses where effectively if you were told to close on that Friday, the tap of cash that you were used to simply got switched off. And there were hundreds of thousands of people working in hospitality who, you know, essentially we didn't know whether we'd got, you know, the team had got jobs or not, because we had no, you know, idea of what financial support we were going to get, if any, or what we were able to do. So that initial communications piece was incredibly key to say, look, you know, bear with us. You're gonna get paid this month. You know, we will get through this. And luckily, the Chancellor, in possibly one of his first, if not second jobs into his new role, was to introduce the furlough scheme, which, you know, in my opinion, has you know, it's had a lot of critics, but I think it's safeguarded a number of jobs in our industry particularly.
No, I 100% agree. I think it's easy to criticise, but you know, I wouldn't want to be trying to put a scheme like that in place with 4 days notice and expect it to work. So, you know, what weaknesses it has had, I think you can forgive the guy, I think. And what about, so later on, when as you start to, and I've spoken to a few retailers, less hospitality, but a few retailers, where as they were starting to get ready to open up, as we got to sort of June and July, they were getting involved in sort of trying to liaise and coordinate with staff to see what they would be comfortable with and what they weren't. How did that sort of manifest itself at Marston's with getting a pub open, which I'm sure is even more challenging than retail?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, first of all, I'll take the people bit first. I think we were, and again, as you said, we were quite, I don't want to use the word harshly treated, but it was quite challenging for us. But in some respects, because the rules and regulations were quite tight, it meant we knew, although it was late coming, we knew exactly what we had to do from an operational point of view. It was more the challenge of working out with everybody in terms of their well-being around, you know, are they physically able to come to work? Are they still shielding because they were on the shielding list? Are they caring for elderly parents because elderly parents are shielding? Have they got young ones who are, still off school that they needed to take care of? So there was a lot of things that we had to communicate with the teams and take account of, you know, as we were reopening. And I think that you then obviously have to consider retraining the team. It had been 3 months since they'd worked in our business, and we were having to train them with new ways of working. So I think all of that added up to quite a challenging few weeks, I think, in the lead up to the 4th of July when we were able to reopen our doors.
And how did the 4th of July, that's a very appropriate date, how did the Independence Day go? You know, was it, do you feel you coped well with it? And how did, probably more importantly, how did the staff feel it went?
I think it was stressful. I think it was stressful for everybody. It was stressful for the businesses. It was stressful for the teams. It was stressful for the guests. I think ultimately it's one of those things where I think in the majority of cases, the guests were very understanding, and flexible, and understood there were rules in place that we were just following the rules. So I think from that perspective, it was good. I think it was fair to say there were a group of people that were itching to get back to the pubs and restaurants that came back without any concerns. But there was also another group of people that were, I think, slower in adopting, you know, the feeling of the new regulations in the pub. But once they came back, they thought, oh, this actually, I feel really safe. It's okay. I'll come back again. So from that perspective, it was what I'd probably describe as a slow burner in terms of getting back to some level of normal trade, I would suggest.
Yeah, no, cool. And you talked to me previously, you told me about the Wellbeing Warriors, that was an internal sort of Marston's group. Talk to me a bit about that. Who are they and how did it come about and what did they do to help?
Yeah, so I suppose there's two bits to this sort of story, I suppose. And the first is it originally started, I think, you know, if it's a fairness to say, back to comms piece between us, I say us, as in the pub support centre and the teams around, you know, making sure they're looking after them, making sure we're in contact with them and driving a communications agenda and really putting it front and foremost in everyone's minds. And it became even more key as we started to unwind from the regulations in that first lockdown, and it was important to us that we came up with a plan during that first lockdown which allowed us to really support the physical, mental, and financial well-being of all our team within the business, regardless of whether they were furloughed or not, because there was different types of pressures on each of those different groups, And we did a lot around signposting to support networks. So we're lucky enough in the hospitality industry to have a trade body that provide wellbeing support for our team members across various different levels. But we then introduced different things like Zoom quizzes, some competitions, some partnerships with local wellbeing businesses, you know, just to help the teams feel like they were still part of the Marston's family, even though 90% of us weren't working at the time. So, you know, that was where it really started. And then since then, it's just continued as a group of people. And we've now got corporate people from various different functions representing their own teams. But also we've now engaged with the operations teams on the front line there. They're back at work to get some wellbeing champions in and around the pubs businesses so that people have got somebody who they can contact via Yammer or our teams group when they've got some, you know, some serious problems that they need some support with.
Oh, excellent. So it sounds like, you know, I don't want to put words into your mouth, David, but it sounds like lockdown sort of encouraged you to start Wellbeing Warriors as a team, and then it's put wellbeing much more on the agenda, and it's carried through post lockdown, and hopefully will carry on into the future. Have I described it well, or have I put words into your mouth there?
No, I think that's a fair I think that's a fair assessment of what we're trying to do with it. I think wellbeing was becoming more and more front of mind with business and life in general. You know, probably before COVID, and I think for us, like a number of other businesses, it's probably accelerated some action that we recognised we needed to take. And hopefully the team have appreciated what we've tried to do with the group. And, you know, in a similar way, we mentioned about the, you know, the furlough scheme getting a lot of critics, and it actually helped in a way. We know that we are far from, you know, perfect in terms of what we're trying to do. It's very much work in progress, but we're determined to make sure that our people's well-being is at the forefront of everything we do as a business.
No, listen, excellent. Listen, we should move off from Marston's. So I want to talk to you about your book, but I for one, want to thank everybody at Marston's and anybody else in the hospitality industry for getting those pubs back open, because it's definitely made a difference to people's lives. Particularly during the Euros, it was good to be able to go and watch a game and have a beer. So, let's move on.
I think that...
Go on. Sorry, David, I interrupted.
That's okay. No, I was just going to say, yeah, I think it was from our point of view. Obviously, we're really pleased the pubs are open, and we're glad to hear that, you know, that we are able to get back in, you know, in to be the sort of the centre of the community, which is what, you know, what we aim to be in the, you know, in the industry, and allow those moments of you know, those touch points for people who sometimes, you know, may have been isolated for a while during lockdown, and allow them to, you know, to see their friends, to socialise with people, and just get out and about and see people and speak to people. So I'm glad to hear that you're appreciative of what everything we've tried to do.
We definitely were. Listen, so the book Fueled, Fit and Fired Up. Why don't we start with you know, talk me about what inspired you to write it, and then and just give a little overview of what it is and what it's trying to achieve.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, I think, I mean, going back to what I said about right at the beginning, really, about sort of me realizing as I've gone through my career about how my sort of mental, physical, and I suppose emotional well-being impacts the way I work, the way I operate as an individual, the way I feel, and all of those sort of things. And I'd probably got to a point towards the back end of 2019 where I sort of realized I needed to do something different with the way I was living my life, I suppose, in the nicest possible way. Not that there was anything bad in it, but I just felt that, I suppose, I use a line in the book called, which says, I was tired of being tired. And I think that sort of sums it up, is that I wanted to try and make sure I was energized for the challenges ahead. And particularly at that time, we were at the, you know, at the cusp of what was turned into an 18-month global, you know, pandemic. And I wanted to make sure my health and well-being was in the right place. So I tried some various different things, whether it be, you know, meditation and mindfulness, whether it be different breathing techniques, what I was eating, how I was exercising, you know, all of those sort of things. And I was sharing some of this at the same time with a Facebook group that I joined called How to Be Brilliant, which is run by a gentleman called Michael Heppel, who also has happened to write the foreword for my book as well. And a lot of people were giving me some real positive feedback about what I was sharing. And said, a couple of people said, oh, you ought to write a book. I was sharing some recipes, some exercise routines I was doing and all that sort of stuff. And so I thought to myself, a little bit later on in the year, an opportunity arose to join a writing course, which also happened to be run by my friend Michael, and started to sort of share and write about, and, you know, all the stuff I'd learned and tried and tested to help with my own well-being, and that's where the book really came from. And it covers, you know, the fueled bit is not just about what you eat and drink, it's about how you breathe, how you sleep, how you clear your mind, you know, everything you can do to energize your body to make yourself drive to be physically, mentally, emotionally fitter than you are. And that ultimately gets you fired up to, you know, take on the challenges that we all have to face day in, day out. And that's how the book's come about.
I had the chance to read it before we did the podcast, and, you know, and it, you know, the, you know, fueled, fit and fired up is three elements to the title there. And it comes up throughout the book, doesn't it? The power of three, and quite a lot of the things you describe are coming in groups of three. I just wonder if you could expand on that for the listeners.
Yeah, of course. So the power of three is something that I remember watching a YouTube video a few years ago of a TED talk, and somebody was talking about the power of three and how it influences through your, you know, through your childhood without even realizing it. So as you say, you know, in the book I talk about things like the three little pigs as a story that we get told when we're children, and how, you know, we came, we saw, we conquered, and how this sort of power of three becomes the first point where we start creating patterns during our childhood, and pattern forming is really key to creating new habits. And it sort of gives you a bit of resonance to the way you sort of talk and say things, because there's three distinct elements to, you know, if you took something like Barack Obama's Yes We Can, there's a start, there's a middle, there's an end. It's easily memorable. People still use it now, you know, way after the, you know, way after, you know, sort of Obama's tenship as the president of the US. And it's sort of, that's the bit that I first started sort of thinking about it. And then as I started researching and reading more, I realized that it fitted in really, really well with some of the stuff around Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which traditionally people will see that as a five-stage pyramid. But actually, in some instances, you can see it just as a three-stage pyramid. So the basic needs of, you know, health, safety, food, fuel, etc. The psychological needs of, you know, love and sort of family and all that sort of stuff. And then the self-fulfillment need of wanting to develop, wanting to do stuff, wanting to be, you know, successful in our lives. And so that's why it really sort of lent itself to me, in terms of actually that's a really good way of looking at it, and how the title of the book came about. And then I started looking into some stuff that a speech that Martin Luther King gave around the length, breadth and height of life, and about how the length of life is you sort of looking at yourself, you know, first and getting yourself sort of in the right place, which I suppose links quite nicely with Maslow's basic need. And then the breadth is more outward looking and looking at other people and how you can use what you've learned or the knowledge you've got in life to share with others. And then the height really is that link with a self-fulfillment bit, is how do you really take that to the next level and start getting fired up for all the outside challenges. So I thought it all knitted in quite nicely into what I was trying to do with the book.
No, listen, I think it comes across, you know, the reason I picked it out of the book is that theme runs throughout it, and I think holds it together nicely and acts as a sort of a structure to put across a lot of the other arguments. So, no, I think it was a good choice, and I'd never really sort of followed the power of three before, so I found that interesting. And talking of three, so, you know, it's the book, as you've said, it's full of tips and ideas of, you know, how to improve in these areas. But give me your three favourite tips to help become fueled, fit and fired up.
Right. Okay. So I think the first one just goes back to what I was talking about, just about Dr. King's speech and the length of life and focusing on yourself first. So there's a phrase I use in the book, which a number of other people have used it before. So it's fit your own face mask first. So it's a little bit, you know, concentrate on yourself. You know, as humans, we naturally want to help others and want to make others the best they can be, but actually you've got to make sure you're at 100% first. So as they say, if anybody can remember listening to safety briefings on aircraft, they always say if the cabin pressure drops and the masks do drop down from the ceiling, make sure you fit your own first before you start helping others. And that's a real key for me, in life. I think the second one would definitely be beat the weak. So I mentioned this two or three times in the book, and that's about that being imperfect is okay. That actually you can have two or three days, where perhaps you don't exercise as much as you want to, or you maybe don't eat as healthily as you want to. And as long as you're having more good days than bad, you're moving in the right direction. And that's what we've got to remember. Because I think perfection in the way the world is now, I think perfection is held up in such high esteem that actually you can feel good and not be exercising 7 days a week and eating completely clean. And sometimes I think people, and I know I have in the past, lose sight of that. And then the third one, again, would be remove the mood hoovers. So for anybody who hasn't heard the term mood hoover, it's normally used to describe those people that sort of suck out the positive energy from a conversation or a meeting or a get together, whatever it might be. And I, in the book, I talk about it being as applicable to inanimate objects as it is to people and things. So as an example, it's sort of, you know, particularly during lockdown, I was trying, you know, to only take in the news once a day, to avoid all the sort of negativity that was around sort of COVID sort of draining my energy. Again, in the book, I talk about the bathroom scales or weighing scales as a mood hoover, and how, you know, you think you're doing working really hard, you jump on the scales, that tells you a different story. But actually, you've exercised, that's a good thing. And you don't want that mood to drop down just because you're not seeing the numbers. And I jokingly said to somebody the other day, it does feel a little bit strange that the accountant has written a book about well-being and is saying the numbers don't matter. It's all about how you feel. So, and that's sort of the third one I'd include in my top three tips.
No, listen, I think that, you know, they're all good tips. So the last one definitely resonates. I think, you know, a lot of people I know, including myself, stop looking at those press conferences every evening because it wasn't making the lockdown go any quicker, was it really? I think that's that's good advice. And definitely the scales. Yeah, I'd definitely sign up to that one. Where do you see yourself going next in sort of the wellbeing space? Is it carry on developing at work, or you can write another book, or are you done? What's next for you then, David?
No, no, I think it's possibly all of the things that you've just said, Ian. To be honest, I think there's still a lot of stuff for us to do at Marston's and get us in a place where we feel that we've got, you know, we're as close to 100% as we see it in order of supporting our team. So obviously there's still some work to do with that, and there's some stuff that I'm keen to develop there. As I said earlier, I'm part of the Enterprise Advisor Network, which is a group of individuals who are partnered with schools, who work in industry and are partnered with schools to help the schools with their career strategies. So obviously I'll get an opportunity to liaise with teachers and young people and students, through that role. And I think there's a lot to be said about some of the things that I talk about in the book can certainly help with those individuals as they come out of secondary education and maybe going to tertiary education at either university or college or indeed going to work, and that can benefit them there. And also I think there's a bit around linking my sort of finance background and business background with well-being and almost being able to help or find a way of helping smaller businesses sort of support their, not only their people's well-being, but their business's sort of commercial well-being, and use that link to help them understand their businesses a little bit better. So I think there's various different ways to go with this, I think, Ian.
Yeah, well, to be honest, you know, having run a few small businesses, I can assure you, if you get your cash flow right, it's the well-being it comes after that. It's a lot less stressful. But the opposite is also true. If you don't get it right, it becomes highly stressful. So no, I think there's a well-being and companies and startups. I can see there's a link there. Listen, we could go on all day, I'm sure, David. But as I bring it to an end, there's a question I ask everyone. And I want you to tell me what book or media is giving you most inspiration at the moment, and you can't use your own.
Oh, I'm going to have to think about the answer to this question now, Ian. Now, there's probably, if I'm okay, I'm going to be really cheeky and talk about two, if that's okay, because one's an activity out of a book called, funnily enough, called How to Be Brilliant, by Michael Heppel, and it's called The Wheel of Life. And it's an exercise where there are eight different elements to your life, whether it be health, work, family, relationships, all sorts of different things. And you can create one and have eight different things, whatever suits you. But every month I do that, and it really focuses on where I need to change my focus in terms of making my life more balanced. So that's something that I'd highly recommend people taking a look at.
Okay, well, I'll put a link to that in the bottom. And the second one?
And the second one is on Instagram, follow an account called @the52tips. And 52 is the number. And every week there's an Instagram live, and there's also a website that accompanies this where somebody comes on and just shares a health or well-being tip that is easily introduced into anybody's life over the course of a week, and it's got quite a good community feel to it, and it just allows you to try stuff that maybe you wouldn't have come across ordinarily in the well-being space.
Okay, fine. I tell you what we'll do is we'll put the links to those books and your book in the podcast notes, and I'm sure our listeners will look those up and hopefully buy a few copies of your book. Listen, David, that's been really good conversation on two subjects, really. It was great to hear about how Marston's approached lockdown and all the challenges they had to overcome. But it was equally good to hear about your book and what inspired you. And I'm sure we'll get some people to get a copy and read it. Thanks very much. And thank you, everyone else, for listening.
Yeah, thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure being part of the podcast today.
You're welcome.